Werner. So today we are discussing with Justin Avery. What did you think about that interview?
So Jonathan, before you sneak another Australian into the show, you need to give me fair warning, buddy. You need to understand that there's a long-standing history of sports rivalry between South Africa and Australia. We don't take these things easily.
Okay.
But jokes aside, Justin Avery was one of our best guests so far. Really loved speaking to him. Thanks for hooking us up.
Yeah, I know he's a very, very interesting dude.
Yes, two of the main topics we covered with Justin is, first of all, the deep community that he built around responsive design. And then something that I found very interesting is the fact that he's also the owner of a small little side hustle. He creates these well-designed small pocketbooks. We deep dive a little bit into that topic around how he makes these books and how he distributes them. And I found that really inspiring.
What I liked most was the transition between creating something virtual to something tangible.
Then something very important, and this is to you. Yes, you listening to the show now. I just want to say thank you very much from Jonathan and myself for spending the time, and I know time is super valuable, listening to our podcast. We would really love you to send us your feedback. Remember, we're doing the show for you and we want to give a little bit something back to the design community, and we would really, really, really love your comments and your feedback. It also helps us to keep going and make sure we create the content that's valuable to you. So thank you very much, and please keep on listening. We appreciate it. So Jonathan, without further ado, let's jump into the Justin Avery Show.
I'm Justin Avery. I do lots of things. I run a newsletter, a weekly newsletter about responsive design. I run a website based off that newsletter as well, about responsive design. My day job is working with companies, building websites for them effectively. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the past 20 years, I would say, is just building lots and lots of websites. Well, I'm originally from Australia, in a tiny little town called Darwin, which has about 120,000 people in it. I spent the first 27 years of my life hanging out there before I shipped off, went around the world, checked out a few places, and ended up landing in London. And I planned to be here for a couple of months to save up some money and continue traveling, but I ended up not continuing traveling. Found a job, got settled into life, met a girl, had kids, had a family. And that's where I'm chilling out now. I'm chilling out at a place called Tame in Oxfordshire in the UK and working out of London.
What an awesome introduction. Thanks for that, Justin. And to kick off the show, I mean, we pride ourselves that we are a very intellectual outfit. So the first,
I might have the wrong person.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, just stick with us, dude. So the first question that we usually ask our guests is, what is your unique value proposition? What is it that makes you special to clients? Like, why would people want to work with you?
That's a cool question. That's a good way to start. That's a tough starting question. You see, the other week, so about probably 2 weeks ago now, I went through an annual review in my normal work, my day-to-day job with my boss, and she had feedback. I'm not sure if it's just Australians, but a lot of Australians don't like to sort of talk about themselves in any nice way. So I'm going to use her feedback as a way to cover that off. So I like to think, and so this is based on her feedback, but I like to think I have a good understanding and empathy of people's problems. And more importantly, their business issues as well. So I've got a reasonable grasp of technology and all of its possibilities. And I think the uniqueness comes in finding a balance between the two, or finding that link between the two. So work with clients, and it's not so much like, hey, you should use this technology for the technology's sake because it's cool and everyone is saying it's a new trend, but it has to have a purpose. So it needs to tie into one of their business problems and help them either lower costs, increase productivity, increase sales, whatever it might be. And I've got a reasonably good track record of seeing a business problem and finding a piece of technology that can fit that area. The other nice thing is, because I've been working in the industry for a little while, I think people get to a point where they have enough experience to say that they don't know something. And I don't mind saying that in front of a room full of people or on a podcast to thousands of listeners. There's lots of stuff. We can't know everything. And I think anyone that can sort of sit there and go, you know what, I have no idea what you're talking about, but this is my opinion. This is what I do know. But also saying no to clients is something which comes with experience as well. And to pick apart things, if they've got an idea which has a fault in it, rather than say, yeah, let's run with that and try and eke money out of them, is just shoot them down in a nice way and offer alternatives for them.
And that's a brilliant point for a humble Australian. You dug deep there, dude. Thank you. you very much. So the ones that I take away for myself, as well as curiosity, I picked up the willingness to learn and listen. And then the other one that's interesting that I haven't spoken to anybody to in a while is the ability to say no. And I agree with you. It's really around having the experience and the maturity to say no, because sometimes it's not a right product for a client, or maybe sometimes it's not right for you as a business or as a designer to do. So that is a great value proposition, by the way.
And I think it's not always easy to say no as well. I think early on in your career or your business, you kind of have to say yes to things that you don't really want to. You're not in that lovely position where you can turn things down because there's a whole bunch of other stuff waiting, or you're in a comfortable position to say no. So it is a tough place to get to.
Yeah, and I think a lot of designers have this can-do attitude. And that can attitude can usually also get you into trouble where, yeah, I can quickly do this. I want to help this guy out because he's a good guy. And then all of a sudden you find yourself with like 10,000 projects that you have to deliver by midnight.
Exactly. And then you let a whole bunch of people down.
Exactly.
Because you've taken on too much.
And that letting down makes a lot of damage, right? It's really hard to get people's trust back after something like that. So definitely. So Justin, we shaped this interview quite a weird way because we want to step away from the digital world for a while and talk a little bit about a project that I know that you're quite passionate about and something that we find super interesting, the world of Backpocket. I want you to just explain to us a little bit about what that is, but it inherently, I don't want to give it away completely, but it's a non-digital product. So what is it and how does someone like you, who is a digital legend, move into doing something so tactile?
Well, thank you. I wouldn't say legend in any way, shape or form,
too
but
humble,
thank
too
you.
Humble.
So the offline stuff is weird. I remember before phones and stuff, before we were glued to our phones and I was still in Australia, one thing that I really loved was like going on road trips with friends. They're going to like the East Coast and getting in a car and driving down and staying in caravan parks and trying to learn to surf and do things like that. I always loved looking back on those trips. And I'd always carry a notepad with me and a pen. And it might be when we're in the car driving or when we got somewhere. 9 times out of 10, it was the end of the day when I was sitting at a pub. And I'd just sort of write down what had happened that day, like the good memories, that we always did some silly things. But just capturing those memories, writing them down kind of helped cement in my mind what had happened. And also I knew that from trips in the past that rereading that stuff allowed you to relive those same memories again in a way that you couldn't really do. No one had like loads of cameras and Facebook wasn't a thing at the time. So it was a really great way. And the other thing I loved was I really enjoyed when I was in school, every term we'd get like a new exercise book. And we had blue exercise books for English and we had green exercise books, which were graphed for maths. And on the inside covers of the blue exercise books, it talked about like what a noun was, what an adverb was, what an adjective was. And they gave examples of those. And then the maths one had like all the like how to find the radius of a circle, how to find the circumference, the area of a circle, how to find the area of a prism, of a pyramid, a whole bunch of stuff. Isosceles triangles, how to work out a whole bunch of stuff. But I just remember it being super informative and you would use the inside of those books to help you with the maths as you went on. And so when I was doing a whole bunch of digital stuff, I'd kind of got to the point where I was lacking that creativity side, that tactile side.
Right.
And everything I was building was digital and you could read it. And I mean, fair enough, with phones and tablets now, you can almost touch it. But there's nothing that you could grab onto. So I decided I'll create a notebook. How hard is it to create a notebook? And that I just build one. And I was really fortunate that I had this audience through my digital stuff that I wanted to do a particular set of notebooks for the responsive design stuff. So I had a captive audience, so I knew that they would sell and I didn't have to go too deep into it. So yeah, I decided to put together these notebooks, which had just information on the inside, something that was educational as well as useful.
This is interesting. You just told us that you knew that your notebook would sell. I'm actually surprised because having a digital audience doesn't mean automatically that they will buy an artifact. Otherwise, everybody will sell t-shirts of their website. How did you shape, how did you make your notebook unique enough so that they would attract your audience?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's kind of difficult. I didn't do a huge run to begin with because I was fairly confident people would buy it. But most people, if they want a notebook, you'll just go to Staples or whatever your stationery store is and you could buy a pack of 10 pucker pads for probably a pound or dollar, wherever you are. I wasn't going to try and compete on that. And I wanted it to be more of a keepsake. So I figured, well, we've got responsive design. There were three tenets of responsive design. And how do I educate people on what those tenets were? So there was like flexible grids, fluid media, and media queries. Yeah. So I was like, well, that's a good set of three that I could just do. And a lot of people that were signing up to the newsletters were new into digital, or they were new into responsive. So they were always keen to learn. So on the inside of the notebooks, I just included information about them so people could come to grips with them a little bit more and understand them.
How are you able to translate those tenets into a physical asset?
I made the notebooks fully responsive. So depending on when you need it, if you wanted it in your bag, they would grow to an A4. And if you needed to put it in your back pocket, it would shrink down to an A6. Which is, nah, I didn't really. That would be cool though, right? That would be awesome. I wouldn't be talking to you guys. I'd be on the TV.
I was like reflecting. I didn't see that on the website. How did you pull that off?
Quick.
That was brilliant, man.
No, so it was really difficult. And people did say that to me. They're like, if you've built a responsive notebook, you're going to make millions. It was more about explaining the tenets of responsive design. And I'm not a great designer. I've improved over the years. So a friend of mine, brother, was getting into design. So I hired him and paid him to design some icons and some illustrations for me in the pages to help describe what fluid media meant, to help describe what fluid grids meant, and to help describe what media queries were. And then I put the content around it. And I was also really fortunate as well, folks like Brad Frost, Ethan Marcotte, Jeremy Keith, John Alsop as well. I got in touch with them. I was doing an interview series through the podcast and asked them if I could use quotes from them in the notebooks as well to explain things. And the group of people that work on the web are such amazing people. They were like, absolutely, totally, absolutely fine. It's like, well, do you want commission? How do you want it to work? And they're like, are you kidding? Just put it in. I'd be honored to have it mentioned. So yeah, the web community is amazing for helping people out.
Yeah, I agree with that. May you describe how your notebook looks like, the size, quality of paper?
Yeah, and also where can we get it? Yeah. Where can, like, share the URL, please.
Yeah, sales. Ching. So they're all small. They all fit in your back pocket as well, hence the name. So you've got like your A4, and you fold an A4 in half, and you've got an A5, you fold an A5 and a half, and you've got an A6. They're a little bit different size to an A6, but they fit perfectly in your pockets. In fact, I think they're the same size as Field Notes, which I love as well. Field Notes are top-notch. Great notebook. Right. But yeah, they're great. The quality of the paper that I use and the printing process that I use is not designed to create as many possible notebooks as I can for as cheap a price to make the biggest markup and the biggest profit. From that point of view, I'm a really terrible business person, because what I really wanted to focus on is a gorgeous paper that feels amazing, that you really love writing on. It just feels nice to carry around. And the printing process as well goes through like the proper offset printing, not a digital print. There's nothing wrong with digital print. It's just like going through a lithograph, offset printing just produces, I think, better quality product. So it goes through that. I would say it's probably better quality notebooks at the end of the day than probably 95% of what's on the market in that sort of area as well. But you pay for it as well. So it's not cheap. The notebooks retail for about £12 for a set of three, or £8 for a set of two, or the plain notebooks as well. So they're not the cheapest notebooks out there. They're not the most expensive as well, but they're lovely, and I love them, and I love making them as well.
Can you share with us the URL of the website where we can grab them?
It's backpocket.co.
Excellent. And I just want to share a little thing, something which I think is a segue or connected to what you're talking about in the sense of notebooks. So two things come to mind is that I remember when I started in user experience design is that the pen and paper was actually the most important tool that the UX designer could have, because sitting down and drawing. So your notebooks really resonate with me in that fact. And then also the other thing that I wanted to share is I think there's a movement around authenticity and experience where people actually appreciate artifacts like what you are creating. I, for example, I have one of these traveler notebooks that I carry around and make my physical notes in. So I resonate with that. And also a small thing that I do, and people always laugh at me, but I have a pocket watch with me.
Because
I feel like, yeah. And the thing is, people always ask, why does this pompous have a pocket watch in his pocket, and it's nothing else except for the fact that I feel we work in such a digital world, and sometimes I take the pocket watch out and I just appreciate the mechanical action that is in there. I mean, that thing was built by hand, and I think your notebooks are in that same world, because I remember Jono sharing the URL to your website and I had a look there, and I was really looking through all those notebooks. It's beautiful. So I think you're really onto something with this, and I think there's a general movement towards more authentic experiences and authentic artifacts.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
What was the reaction around you when you start to launch this venture? Because people you knew as a very tech guy. So how did they react when you told them, hey guys, I'm going to create a notebook?
People were kind of surprised. They're like, why? Why are you creating notebooks? No one ever uses notebooks, or don't do notebooks. It's bad for the environment because they cut down trees for it. Just on that as well, I make a point of it. Like I work with GF Smith, the paper company here based in the UK.
Okay.
They do this really cool paper, which John, you will have felt, which is the notebooks we did for the Beyond Telerand conference.
Right.
And they're made from recycled paper cups. So they've gone out to three different coffee manufacturers, so like your Starbucks, your Costa people, and they're taking back, I think it's a quarter of all the wasted cups that they have, which runs into millions and millions and millions. Stripping them down, they're taking the plastic off the outside, which is the marketing bit, and they're turning that into insulation for wires. So they're shipping that back to China on cargo ships that otherwise would have been empty, to turn it into like insulation for wiring.
Excellent.
And the pulp that they're left with, they're turning into paper, re-dyeing and then selling on, which I thought was really cool. I was like, oh, that's great, because paper is a bit of a waste. But it turns out as well, paper comes from the tops of trees. So most of the trees that get cut down these days are to build houses and to make furniture, but they can't do it with the tops of them because the branches are too weak. So the tops of the trees are actually used for the paper manufacturing. And so it's used as like the offcut bits that you would usually discard, which I didn't know as well, which I thought was really cool. But I said, I went off on a tangent there, sorry. But so the reaction was...
It's interesting though, it's brilliant.
Oh, I found it interesting, yeah. Yeah, so the reaction was kind of funny. Like good friends were sort of asking why I would get into it, which is essentially, why would you get into like a stationary thing, which is essentially a dead business in their minds. My wife wants to know often why there's so many notebooks around in the house and why anytime that we make any money from the notebooks, I don't use that money for things like a bathroom or a holiday or something, that I just go and buy more notebooks and create a new set of notebooks. So her reaction was good though, because she encouraged me to create the product. So she's like, if you're going to do it, you may as well make a product. Don't just do a responsive one, do base a business on it.
Yeah.
So that's been really good. And the reactions of other people have been great as well. Whenever I've got in touch with people and said, look, do you want to check these out, or do you want me to do something for a conference? They've all been very, very supportive, which is great. So I think there was a small gap in the market for this kind of stuff.
Spot on.
Excellent. Creating a notebook requires various skill set that you obviously didn't have at the beginning. But I can imagine that during those last few years, you worked on those skills. So can you tell us more about that? What did you do in order to create better books over and over and continue to iterate?
So the first time, like I said, I grabbed a designer to help me put it together, which was smart and not smart as well, because they were a digital designer and they did designs, but they never did print work.
Right.
And it's a massive difference in creating a logo or creating some art and then turning that art into something physical. I'm not a great designer, and I'm really bad at Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign. You know, when you watch someone who's good at Illustrator or watch someone that's good at Photoshop, like they hardly go to a menu. They know all the shortcuts. They know how to do things.
Yep.
Really quickly and efficiently. And I am not that person at all.
You are not that guy.
I'm definitely not that guy. So for example, there's a way in Illustrator when you just say you've made a mistake. So I made a mistake in the set of color notebooks that I'm doing, or I'm doing a CMYK primary color set, and I made a mistake in the type of red that I wanted to use. And so I would go around to this 25 different versions of red I've got on that page and update it, which is horrific. And then a mate of mine who I work with, who is great at Illustrator, is just like, no, you know, you can just go object select same color. And I was like, it would just select everything that has that same red. And he goes, and then you just update it. I was like, thank you. Where were you 2 hours ago?
Yeah. Just changed your life.
Yeah, well, totally. And so it's been really, really helpful. I work next to a guy called Dave Murphy, and he's a production expert. So for 25 years, he's been doing InDesign stuff. And whenever I'm doing something, I've sketched it out on paper. And I sort of say to him, look, this is what I'm trying to do. This is my idea. What would you recommend? And he kind of gives me tips about how I should go through things, about things like flight paths, which sounds really cool, but it's essentially before you push something out to print, it's a bunch of checks to make sure that everything's CMYK colors, everything's embedded, the fonts are embedded, like all the checks that a printer needs to make sure are done before it goes through. Outside of the design side as well, the paper world is just bizarre. Some paper is like incredibly expensive and just not worth it. Other paper is too cheap and things run on it. So it's really good. I found Jeff Smith, who have been super helpful. They give me like endless supplies of samples and help me find the right things for what I'm trying to do. And printers as well. Like I work with a great printer who helps me along with like, this should be a spot color. You need to change this, you can't do that, this would be better for production if you can add another notebook. I even had, the printer was so good one time, I was reprinting a set of the space notebooks.
Yeah.
And there's a set of three, right? And so the way it works out that each design, when I go to print, you can print four designs and I only had three, so three plates, but you can run four plates. Running a fourth plate has no additional cost at all because it's already printing. You're already using the same paper. It is literally no additional cost to print an extra thing. So he kind of called me up. He said, look, we're running the print on Monday. If you can send me another print, just do another set of 500 notebooks for free. So it's like, this is amazing. Like who does that? And that's where the Cricut set of notebooks did. I spent the whole weekend designing this set of Cricut notebooks that went through. So yeah, it's been difficult, but really fun working still digitally and still learning about how things need to work and then getting this physical product at the end. And it's helped the website of things as well. For one, I appreciate how much easier it is to build a website. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been different.
So I just want to confirm that I just ordered my set of SpaceX notebooks while you were talking, because I mean, I couldn't resist it anymore. I went to the site, quick and easy, ordered one. It's on its way, I hope.
Yeah, no, it's not quite on its way, but you know, I've got the...
You can end the recording early and then...
I've got the padded envelope in front of me, and I won't read out your address, but I can absolutely confirm that you have ordered it. I've got the order here.
Excellent. This is so cool, man. I really encourage people to go check it out, backpocket.co. Over to you, Jono.
What advice would you have for a digital designer who is listening to this podcast and who wants also to create something physical? What would you tell them to do first?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they're most of the way, like as a digital designer, they're already really familiar with the tools and stuff. So I think for me, don't create a physical product to make money. Because it's really difficult. It's very difficult to be found and generate large amounts of money. Like it's very difficult. So I would say don't do it. Don't think, oh, yes, I can make some money on this. But do it because you love it or you really want to do it and you want to learn more about it. And I think if you nail that part of it, then it doesn't matter if you make money or not. But what you'll find will happen is because you're so passionate about it, you'll probably talk about it, you'll write about it, you'll post about it, you'll put Instagram pictures up on it and people will find it and they will be infected by your love of this product. And those sales and that money will slowly come in. The other thing I think is if you're going to start doing the physical products, you don't need fancy tools or anything for it. Like don't go out and buy a really expensive screen printer. If you're going to start screen printing stuff, just bash one together with a couple of planks of wood and some stretchy stuff. And there's tutorials online for it. And just get by with what you've got. And then once you've been doing it for a little bit and you love it and you can't do it fast enough, then and some money's starting to come in, then use that money to buy some better equipment and stuff. But definitely go the cheap option.
I think there's also a lesson here in what you just said about loving what you do. And I think that advice could actually bleed into your day-to-day as well, because I think sometimes as designers, we forget that you need to inject a little something of yourself into what you do. Because if you don't love the designs that you create, how can you expect your target audience to do the same.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can tell. I think you can tell when designs have just been hammered out and yeah. ones where people have taken some real care.
Exactly. So, Justin, what's up your sleeve next for Backpocket? Do you have any other formats in mind? Is there plans for other versions? Do you have any secrets you can share with us?
I've actually got a show coming up. So I entered both. There's a stationary site and show that gets run in the UK in Manchester and in London. And someone reached out to me and said, you should try out for this. I think it's called a launch pads. Like it's a competition.
Oh, okay.
So I sent some stuff in. So I sent like a couple of different versions. I think it was like the guitar notebooks, the space ones and the plain ones and picked. So I was one of 10 winners, which was amazing.
Congratulations.
It was really great. Thank you very much. I'm really excited about it. It's very cool. It was a shock. But so I've got a stand. So they've given you a free like stand at their stationery show in London. So that's really exciting. I've used that as impetus to create the notebooks that I've sort of been kicking around for a while. So I've been thinking of creating a few. So I've had a solar system set, which has been half finished forever.
Yeah, can't wait to see that one.
Oh, it's so good. I've had so much fun. I love space. And the notebooks that I choose to do it because I love the topic. And it gives me an opportunity to research the crap out of the topic to find the right nuggets of information to drop in there. And I just have had so much fun with the solar system one. But there's going to be like a Day of the Dead one. I've got an illustrator friend who has let me use some of her illustrations, which are just they're absolutely gorgeous. So that's going in there as well. There's an origami set as well. So paper aeroplanes, paper cranes, and some other paper stuff that you can do as a set of four as well. There's the primary color, the CMYK color set coming. So I've got a whole bunch which I'm getting done and printed for the show. Yeah, so it should be really good. I'm using this as like a tester because there's going to be a whole bunch of people there who are keen and will have some great feedback and have been in the industry for ages. And I'm hoping that they'll go, that's a rubbish idea. And I really like that one. And I want to order a whole bunch of this one. And then I'll go back and look at where it goes from there.
Lean startup.
Listen, you need to send us a little selfie or photo when you're at the show.
Oh, we'd
love to
for
see
sure.
the setup. It'll be brilliant. Actually,
the other thing which taps the sort of my digital life into the more analog style as well is I've been really interested in, and this is a small tangent, but really interested in the web XR stuff. And so XR has sort of amalgamated web VR, so virtual reality, and augmented reality, so web AR, under this umbrella of web XR. And so I've been really interested in how I can still play with my digital side and incorporate it into the notebooks as well. So I had lunch the other day at this conference, Reasons 2 conference, which is great, with this guy who has been working in the same kind of area, and he's way more developer-y than me. So I've been using a thing called AR.js. And it works on kind of like QR codes, but they're not QR codes. At the moment, you would need to download an app to do anything with augmented reality in most cases. And then you'd be able to point it at something and then it augments, which is great. But one of the best things I think about the web and why I think the web is better than native is because with the native thing, you've got to get someone onto a website to drive them to the app store to download the app to have the experience. It's really difficult. Whereas with the web, you're already there. So you've done a search and you're on the site. Why not give everyone what they need right then and there? And so there's this thing called AR.js, which allows you to use a web browser on your phone and the phone camera. And you point it at something and it will generate the augmented reality. So I'm really keen to do that with the notebooks as well. So I'm doing it with the solar system set so that they're kind of based on each of the different notebooks, a different planet, and the sun's in there as well. And they are in proportion. So the sun doesn't fit on the notebook because it is massive. Jupiter barely fits on it. Earth is really small on it. But the idea is when you point your phone to it, it will pop up with an augmented version, 3D version of Earth spinning around and give you all the details about it as well. So I'm really keen to see how you can kind of add
Excellent.
Add these sort of digital elements to notebooks as well. Should be fun.
I love it, man. The thing is, I think I don't know if I'm on a soapbox at the moment because I'm thinking about lessons everywhere, but something that came to mind as you're speaking about the augmented reality in the notebooks is that, I mean, we sometimes so easy or so fast to say that something's dead. Oh, print is dead, or this channel is not working anymore. But what I love about what you're doing is that you're taking this analog technology, in quotes, and you're combining it with web, with digital. And together, these two elements actually create an experience for someone. It's, I think as designers, we also need to start thinking more in that way, is that don't just get stuck in this digital world. Expand out of it. See what you can combine. How can you combine experiences? Because human beings move in and out the digital world all the time.
Yeah. And specifically with the augmented stuff at the moment, it's just one area I can just see blowing up in a big way. Like, you know, those times where we sit and look back. Oh, you might sit on a train carriage and you look around and you're like, what did we do before we had phones? Because everyone is just looking at their phone or like Instagram or something. I think it's going to be very similar to web for AR in general, where we will look back in a couple of years and go, how did we live without this extra information around stuff?
Yep. And it's like you said, it's the more we actually remove the friction, right? Because I wasn't aware of the web-based. So, you know, I don't have to go download an app. It's in the browser. Man, that's really moving things forward.
You told us that creating the notebook basically solved one of our issues. You created the notebook that you wanted to have. Is there any other challenge that you want to take on? I know, for example, that you like pens.
Yeah, I'd love to do so much. I really wanted to do a pencil as well. I got in touch with a pencil manufacturer in the UK, and there's a gentleman in Northern Ireland who was kind enough to do some videos for me about the notebooks. And he's a massive pencil nerd. And so he's like, I'll totally help you design a pencil and go to market with it. But at the moment, I am positively stretched. If I have an idea for anything else, I will sell it for a tenner. I would love to do more stuff, but at the moment, I am at capacity, I would think.
So perhaps one of our listeners will be interested. So we'll share contacts, don't worry.
Definitely.
There's a nice startup in there for you.
Yeah.
So if you're keen to get your hands on a free audiobook, this is what you need to do. For listeners of our show, the Block Thinking Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. We can recommend them. Jonathan and myself really love their books and we use them all the time. So this is what you need to do to get into the trial. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/blockthinking. audibletrial.com/blockthinking for your free audiobook. Please let us know what you think. We really want to speak more about books on the show. So, John, are we going to get into some technology now, dude?
Definitely. We would like to talk more about responsive web design and mainly the platform that you build around information and teaching people about responsive web design. So can you tell us more about the website, the newsletter, and all the contents that you are creating about responsive web design?
Yeah, sure. It all started long ago. It started about 300 weeks ago. So Ethan had just written his article. Everyone was kind of keen on responsive design and somewhat not keen. There were a few people who didn't want to go that way. But one thing was certain, that is no one really knew what was going on and no one really knew the best way to do things. Everyone was learning at that time. And I remember when I bought a Book Apart book when Ethan wrote it.
Yes.
And it arrived and the power went out at my house or the friend's house I was staying with at the time. And couldn't get access to the internet. I was working off a desktop machine, so couldn't get access there. I don't know if I had an iPhone at the time, but either way, the connections in Australia was horrific for the internet. So it's basically, I couldn't do anything except read this book. And I read the book in that afternoon, and it spoke to me, I suppose. It was just like the aha moment of like, this is going to be the future. And so I wanted to learn how to do it. So I started doing a ton of research. I'd follow Ethan's stuff. I'd do lots of searches. I had Google alerts set up. I'd follow the right people on Twitter. And I just started collecting this information because there was so many people were writing about it, how they were tackling problems, how they were building frameworks. And it was just a matter of collecting it all. And so I figured, it just sort of occurred to me that it's like, well, if I'm already doing all of this work, I'm already collecting all of this information, how much extra work could it be just to send a newsletter out about it each week? The answer to that is can we swear on this? We won't swear. It's a hell of a lot of extra work. It's more than I ever thought, but it is super rewarding and it's fun. So because I was collecting it all, started sending out this newsletter. Newsletters weren't really a massive, you know how now there's a newsletter for everything? It wasn't that big back then. It wasn't a super common thing to have newsletters for things. And people just started subscribing to it. It was a topic that people were keen to know about and they just wanted to know more about. So I found that it was working really well and the newsletter subscribers continued to grow. And because I was collecting all of this information and this content, it was going onto a WordPress site. So there was an archive of it. But each week there were articles, each week there were frameworks and plugins and things. But you'd have to know which newsletter to go to get the right one. So because I was collecting all these great tools and testing them and prototyping, I decided that what we needed was more like a centralized location of things that would help you if you had any questions and you'd missed a whole bunch of episodes before. And I used to get really frustrated that a lot, and again, I think bad business on my part, it became a very sought after term. Like I remember seeing the Google search console of like how many people search for the term responsive web design just skyrocket. So everyone was trying to game the search term. Everyone was going hard on SEO for it. And 99% of the sites that were doing it they weren't great. And they were misinforming people and they were there just trying to win business and get money. Which is not a bad thing to win business and get money. That's a very good approach to life. but what I wanted was there to be somewhere which people weren't being sold to. They were just there to learn. And so that's how the website came about.
Thank you for sharing.
That's excellent. Tip my hat to the amount of work that you have to put in. And talking about this, I mean, like you mentioned, and you started touching this topic, the newsletter is quite key or core to this. And I think people sometimes underestimate how much work goes into doing a e-newsletter. To what do you attribute the success of this newsletter and what amount of work do you have to put into this?
I think the success is twofold. Like it was just a really good topic. And like I said, I really feel that the responsive design really shaped the way that the web was going. And I mean, it did because everyone has a responsive site now. Loads of people wanted to learn about it. So that in itself was easy. Like I was talking about the right thing. The other one, it was really just down to consistency. Like you said, newsletters are really hard and they seem like a really good idea, but it's a lot of consistent work. So it goes out every Thursday night. So for the last 300 Thursday nights, so there's a bar two and two significant life moments caused me not to send a newsletter. Oh, in fact, I just sent a quick one to say something's happening, told the subscribers what it was and then left it for the week. But it's been every Thursday night. So my poor wife has had to give up any hope of having a date on a Thursday night, given up loads of going out drinking and partying and stuff on Thursdays, or had to do the newsletter at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after having done them, being out going away on holidays and stuff. So I think it's really about consistency. If you're doing anything, if you can do it consistently, whether it's daily, weekly, fortnightly, just be on time and be there when someone's expecting it to be, and they will continue to come back and people will continue to sign up for it. So I'd say that was the main one.
That's a great learning, because one thing that we're also trying to do is we set ourselves a deadline or a rhythm that we want to adhere to. And we are trying our utmost to do that. It's taken some blood, sweat and tears, but that we have found that is at least the base thing that we need to do to try and build the audience and keep that consistency going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think after a few painful times, so painful weeks or months or a year, you get so consistent that you're gaming yourself. Like you don't want to lose that consistency. You don't want to lose your streak that you've got going. So that then, once you get that, I think that you're in a really good place when you have that, because you then can use that as a reason to push through the pain. It's not a pain barrier. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, you just we've got this, run it we've out. We've got this virtual virtual billboard outside our homes. Like in the old industrial times, they had like a billboard that says 50 days since the last injury or something. Yeah. And we're trying to keep that at like maximum, to keep it ticking over, I would say. But as I mentioned to you in the beginning of the show that we are a very professional outfit, I just realized that we never asked you what the URL is of the website and also how our listeners can actually subscribe to the newsletter.
Oh, yeah, good point. So there's two. Yeah. The dead easy one is responsivedesignweekly.com. It just has the email form for you to sign up. Then if you go to responsivedesign.is or rwd.is as well, we'll redirect you there. And that goes to the Knowledge Hub.
Excellent.
So I publish all the newsletters on the responsivedesign.is, publish articles about things, news stories, the podcast for that goes on there. So yeah, lots of stuff goes through there.
Yeah, and some good stuff there. I went to check it out, but I'm sure Jono is the one who actually sniffs around there much more than me.
Yeah. Another thing though, with the cornucopia of content available on the net about front-end web development, how do you make your choice? How do you manage the information overload?
And that's a really tough part of it as well. There's just, I spend a lot of time reading. So first of all, there's like gathering the content, like finding it. So over the years, I've been building up an RSS list. So I use Feedly for it. And as right. I come across really good writers or good blogs or a nice blog post, I'll often add their feed to my long list. I think I've got about 200 on the list at the moment. And so each week I can go through that at my own speed and just see what articles they've released for that week and read through them. Twitter is a great source as well. So I follow what I think are clever people and they often retweet great stuff as well. And it's a way of finding nice content that I wouldn't have normally found. And that then helps complete the loop, because then I'll read a great piece of content that someone else has tweeted about who I follow anyway because they're really smart. And then I read this other blog, so I'll follow them on Twitter and I'll add their blog to my list, and then they'll write something about something or tweet about something. So it's a self-fulfilling thing once you get going in that way. The other thing is having like Google alerts as well for particular keywords, which can be tough because, like I said, people really tried to SEO the crap out of responsive web design and now progressive web apps. And so it's really hard to separate good from bad. But yeah, it's really about just consuming a ton of stuff. And I'm really fortunate that my job kind of requires me to be able to explain to businesses how they can get the best out of the web and where they should be going and the things that they should be investing in or things that they could be doing with their site. So for me to have that background knowledge is really important for my day-to-day job. So it helps in many facets as well.
There is a lot of synergy. Yeah, I see.
And Justin, talking about newsletters, you're an avid podcaster. You mentioned that you've done some interviews. I think you were in a hiatus for a little while, but you fired up the shows again. I listened to your latest edition where you covered some of the, I think, Google-related topics. Can you tell us a little bit about the show? Where can we find it? What kind of topics you cover and some of your experiences around doing podcasting?
Yeah, sure. So the podcast is on the responsivedesign.is site as well. And I think if you searched for responsive design or RWD in iTunes, you'd find it. You'd also find another excellent podcast from Ethan Marcotte and Karen McGrain, who, I mean, they're much better. I'll go that far. They've gone well over 100. I remember I started my, I remember interviewing both of them before they had started their podcast. And I felt like such a fraud, like me running a responsive web design podcast and interviewing the father of responsive web design. And then he released a podcast as well. I was like, oh, this is so awkward. But theirs is great. It started because I had to do an article about some trends around responsive design for .NET Magazine. And I was concerned that I was going to miss something. You know, when you're going to get put in the spotlight for something and you get really worried that someone's going to call you out for being a fraud. So I was really worried about that. And really, I shouldn't have been, but this is natural. It's a natural occurrence. So what I did is I decided that I wanted to interview who I thought were really, really clever people and get there to see if what they thought, where things were going, were going to marry up to my thoughts, and if not, why it didn't, and whether or not I would think that as well. And so I interviewed like 10 of my favorite people, and in that I was like, why don't I just make a podcast with this as well? And so I did. So it started off being very much an interview-based thing to find out more And then I was able to use that to go and talk to people who I really enjoyed their work, like the team at Foundation who built, team at Zurb who built Foundation, which was a great framework. I could speak to people at Airbnb. I just picked companies that I wanted to learn more about their approach to sites. And then when I went down for a little while, I went quiet just because I couldn't do the newsletter and that on a Thursday night. I was getting no sleep at all. But I found that it's not so much, and I found this with the newsletter as well. Responsive design, it's a thing that we all do now. Like it's not a big deal that much, I don't think, anymore. It's just the way that we build the web. So the content in the newsletter and the podcast now is more focused. I think you mentioned it, John, is more focused around front-end development and current trends and how we're building the sites and what things we should be looking out for. So Lisa Werner about last week talking about some Google stuff as well. It's just talking about topical things that are happening and kind of my opinion based on all of this content that I've read, where I think things are going.
Thank you for that. Now I'm coming with a controversial topic. You have been involved during the last few years to recruit product designers, UX designers, front-end developers. How much of front-end development, in your opinion, should a designer, UI, UX designer know?
That is a controversial question. I'll throw my web answer for it, and it depends. It depends what team they're working in. If they're working in a really collaborative team, the company that I was working with, we had the designer sitting opposite the front-end developer. And as the design was occurring, the front-end developer would duck over and have a look at how they were doing it and make recommendations as they went on. And it worked the same way in the other way. When the front-end developer was doing something, the designer would look and go, oh, you need to tweak this or tweak that. So it worked really well. And in that situation, they don't need to know a huge amount about it because they're working in a team where that expertise is available for it. But there are particular things that I think some designers should be aware of when they're designing.
What are some examples of that?
So we're getting some freelancers in for work in the next couple of months, and we're looking for freelance digital designers. So if you're a freelance digital designer in London and you're looking for work over the summer, please let me know. And so I've dug out my things that you need to be aware of when you're designing list. And for me, it's mainly around like what design decisions, they should be aware of the design decisions they're making and how that's going to impact the end user. And as long as they keep that in mind, I think they can muddle through stuff. So specifically, what I see a lot of is these beautiful designs that have this lovely light gray text on white, which looks brilliant on a Mac Retina screen at a billion pixels zoomed in. But when you actually have it on a Windows desktop or something, it just, you can't see. So accessibility is a big thing for me that some designers don't translate across and don't think about when they're designing things because it looks beautiful, just functionally, it just won't work in a real world situation. And the other thing along with that as well that impacts end users is the performance of things. So sometimes the target audience is going to be in areas which have really expensive mobile plans, slow internet connections, yet we've got like videos in a very image heavy site. That's not really going to work, or you want something, there's background videos and things where it doesn't need to have a background video. So some of the art direction, they don't think about the performance side of things, like the end user performance and how that's going to work. And I think the only other one is for digital designers to prepare things in consistent ways. So I'm sure they have a set workflow and they're always going to have like this beautiful picture at the end, a picture of a website or components, but it needs to be exported. Like someone needs to identify what layers are what. And there's things like, and I only learned about this the other month. Have you ever heard of a tool called Zeppelin?
Yes. Tool manage assets.
Right, yeah. So I never heard about it before. And I was sitting to dinner with some acquaintances. And they were like, oh, yeah, we don't use Adobe XD because of whatever reason. We use Sketch and an export to Zeppelin. And I was kind of like, what's Zeppelin? And they're like, oh, you don't know? I'm like, no, what is it? Is it good?
Like,
they're like,
oh,
it's the best. So what? If you arrange your designs in a certain way, so I think with Creative Cloud, if you're using Photoshop and you use artboards, when you pipe it through Zeppelin, Zeppelin will, so there's a thing called like a red line document, which you can give to developers, which tell them like, this is so many pixels and this is the grid gap and this is the margin and this is the padding. Mm. And you normally have to do that manually. And so Zeppelin does that auto magically with the files that you put through.
Love magic.
Which is fantastic. And so for me, working now with like third-party developers where they need to be, you need to be incredibly clear as to what needs to happen. This is amazing. So if designers can make sure that the assets that they're preparing are done in a way that you can pass through like a nice workflow like Zeppelin, that's just, they may just become so much more hireable.
Excellent.
Excellent. Justin, thanks for that. So let's get into a few lighter topics as we start winding down. So one of the segments we usually do in the show is around storytelling. So in my hand, I mean, you can't see this, right? So I might be lying, but you can lie in a few seconds if you want to, is that I've got a deck of cards and I'm shuffling it at the moment. If you call out stop, I'm going to stop. And on that, there's a little challenge for you or a little challenge to tell a story. So shout out stop, and then I'll ask you before we give you the challenge. Stop. Great. So now I'll read this out, but now you can answer this and, you know, it doesn't have to be related to this specific topic, or you can tell as a fib, or this is about storytelling. So here goes. Tell about a job you have had or would like to have.
Jeez. That's a good one. So a job that I have had or that I would like
or would
to
like
have.
To have.
Oh, man. Because it has changed, and it changes from time to time. Like sometimes I want to build things with my hands. Like I'll go into the shed and I'll build a workbench or a sword for my little boy. And I'm terrible at woodworking, but I find the constraints of it quite good. But I think I remember if I didn't have to earn any money, that I just wanted to try and educate people more. So okay. I would try and just build educational tools, but in a way that I would have to do all the research for it to become an expert in the field, and then make it easier for people to learn that same information or that same topic. I think it would still be building sites, but building sites that were not monetary or business driven and more educational.
That's great. I think it made sense. Thanks a lot for that. Justin, then you've mentioned a few people and a few thought leaders in the field. Specifically, if you can highlight one or two people that you specifically follow, is there any mentors that you look up to? Who inspires you?
I'll stick to like specifically in the web development area. There's a few people who I think just do wonderful stuff. Jeremy Keith, I think, is a great spokesman for the web itself. Talked about Brad Frost earlier as well. He's been killing it the last couple of years, and he's always such a good thought leader. Folks like Bruce Lawson, who's been around the traps forever. He writes a lot. He puts stuff out each week. Chris Coyer as well, like Mr. CSS Tricks and Mr. CodePen. He is, like I talked about before, like about a perfect job of just trying to teach people and learn things and pass that knowledge on. Like he just epitomizes that of just writing so much and teaching over and over and over again. So those ones, I'm going to be really annoyed that I forgot someone in particular. Oh, Ethan as well, you know. Yeah, I wouldn't have Responsive Design Weekly without Ethan Marcotte. Yeah, he did quite a bit as well. But there are so many. There's loads of conference organizers and other folks in the web. Yeah, they've all been very, very helpful.
Yeah, it's like they say, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, right?
And I think the industry from a web point of view, like the web community is, at least for me, is great. Like everyone is just so keen to help. And there never seems to be a time where someone's like, no, I'm not going to help you, or I'm not going to contribute to this, or I'm going to keep this away from everyone because I've got a competitive advantage. It's just always been, at least like from a personal level, I'm sure there's companies, large scale companies on the web that do that. But from a personal level, I think everyone tries to share as much as they can. And I think that's the reason why it's advanced so quick. Like it doesn't stop. And I think it's because everyone learns from everyone else. Like you said, standing on the shoulders of giants.
Exactly.
Talking about giants, I noticed that you are also a speaker you have some videos out there, and you also talked at massive conference like Adobe Max. Is it something that you want to expand?
Yeah, definitely. I was really fortunate to get some opportunities to speak at a few conferences, and Adobe Max was one of those. And it's a love-hate thing, and I think everyone has this for public speaking. Like, the lead up to it, the first part is great because I get to do, again, like a whole bunch of research about things. I get to experiment and prototype. And then there's just this horrific bit of spending hours and hours making hundreds and hundreds of slides to realize that it's a 5-hour talk. And then I've got to cut it down to 40 minutes or an hour. And then there's the dread of like, oh my goodness, am I just telling everyone what they already know? Like, there's this weird thing. I think everyone might have, I hope everyone has it, that if you know something, you just naturally assume that every single person also knows that, when in fact it's incredibly rare that's the case. I always go through it. Every time I am doing a talk or preparing it, I swear that I'll never do another one. And then as I get onto the stage, I love it so much. I enjoy it so much. So yeah, I hope to keep doing that moving forward, because it's a really valuable way of being able to connect with people and learn and share your ideas. And anyone that gets a chance to stand on stage is just it's a real honor, I think, for anyone.
I agree. And I echo what you're saying, because sometimes you do feel, I mean, I think you are driven by the feeling that you want to share, trying to avoid the TED talk saying, but you want to share ideas that are worth sharing. So you feel like people are investing to be there to see or spend some time with you. So you want to add value, right?
Absolutely.
Quick question still is, so what are you reading at the moment?
What I do is I walk from the train station into work, which is about like a 35-minute walk each way. Yeah. So I've got into audiobooks.
Oh, I'm guilty of that too.
I read two recent ones, which I thought were really good. Well, three, really. Like, if you like your sci-fi and time travel, there's a Stephen King one called 11/22/63. It's really, really good. And then there's another weird one called Paradox Bound, which is another like weird time travel one. It's great, man. It's really good. And then the other one, which I just finished, was called Infinite by Jeremy Robinson. And similar thing, they're on like a spacecraft heading to Kepler to start a new civilization, and stuff goes down. It's a bizarre, really good. It's got tech in it. It's got code. It's got VR. It's
excellent.
Got time travel and space hopping. Oh, it's great.
You can see the smile in your face.
So before we wrap up, may you share with us different ways to find you on the internet?
Yeah, sure. You can hit me up if you want to say hello on Twitter, which is at Justin Avery. If you want to learn about responsive design, go to responsivedesign.is and learn about it there, read about it, sign up to the newsletter. If you want to pick up a notebook like Werner, you can go to backpocket.co.
Excellent. Follow those notebooks. I can't wait to get mine, by the way. Justin, I just want to say thank you for spending a bit of time with us. Well, a lot of time, actually, and I think it was really valuable. Really do appreciate it. And while you were talking, I was actually thinking about the following, is that you come from the Southern Hemisphere like I do. When I think about Australia, we have a very friendly rivalry with Australia when it comes to sports in South Africa. And there's,
we do. We've got a cricket rivalry going on at the moment.
Exactly. And I mean, the rugby, we're not going to talk about the rugby in this show. No. It hurts me to my soul. But the thing is, all that said and being done is that when I heard that you were Australian, there's like really, I felt the affinity. It was really great to speak to someone from the same side of the planet as me. So really great to chat to you and share some thoughts and ideas. And I wish you all the best with your ventures and much respect for all the work that you put in. I think we could learn a little bit from you, all the effort that you put in, the variety of things that you do. It's really inspiring. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. And thanks for doing block thinking as well. Like, it's been so nice hearing from product designers, UX designers. It's not something that is out there. I think you're filling a really good void, and you're getting some, with the exception of this one, you're getting some really quality speakers and guests in there. It's good.
Thanks for the good note. And also during the show, I was thinking, I really need to get Justin's boss back in here just to tell him that, dude, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Werner. Thanks, John.